This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
AITA for staying away after my daughter uninvited me to her wedding? I always imagined I'd be the one to walk my daughter down the aisle. It was one of those dreams you carry silently, like a guy keeps an old photo tucked in his wallet. Worn and a little creased, but precious all the same. Her name is Megan, and from the moment she arrived, screaming into this world, I made her two promises. I would always love her, and I would always be there for her. Even after the divorce, even when my ex-wife, Brenda, turned cold and wielded silence like a finely honed tool, I kept showing up, softball games, orthodontist appointments, late night calls when her car broke down. When she had her first serious heartbreak in high school, I was there. Maybe not perfectly, but consistently. So, when she got engaged at 26 and asked for my help planning the wedding, I didn't hesitate. I told her I'd handle the venue, the catering, the photographer. Whatever you need, sweetheart, I said, and I meant it. Planning the wedding became a second job on top of my IT project management work. I was up at dawn reviewing vendor contracts and staying late comparing floral arrangements. My weekends were filled with spreadsheets and cake tastings. I even learned the difference between garden roses and dahlias, words I'd never even heard of 6 months prior. But it wasn't just about the event. It was about that moment, that walk, her hand linked with mine, the string quartet marking our slow, steady steps as I gave her away, not just to a man, but to a future she had chosen. I didn't want to control it. I just wanted to be part of it. My ex-wife, Brenda, had other ideas. We've been divorced for 15 years, but she still knows how to twist the knife without even lifting a finger. It started subtly. Suggestions that maybe I shouldn't be involved in certain planning details. Comments about how her husband, Mark, had been very present during Megan's college years. I bit my tongue most of the time. I reminded myself it was Megan's day, not mine, and kept her happiness in focus. But something about Brenda's tone, this smug satisfaction, made my stomach churn, like she was slowly erasing me and replacing me with her second husband, bit by bit. I tried not to show it. I told myself Megan knew the truth, that our bond was different, that when it really mattered, she would choose me. We were in the home stretch, just 3 weeks before the big day, when Megan came over to my place with a bottle of Chardonnay and an apologetic look on her face. I should have known something was wrong. She never brought wine unless she was nervous. "Dad," she began, her voice thin, like paper held too close to a flame. "I need to talk to you about something, and I hope you won't be upset." I smiled and told her to spit it out. I was bracing myself, but I wasn't ready. Not really. Not for what came next. She told me Brenda had mentioned that maybe it would mean a lot to Mark if he walked her down the aisle, that it would keep things smooth, that it was just a symbolic gesture. She said she'd thought about it and decided to let him. "I hope you understand," she whispered. I stared at her, feeling my heart sink like an anchor. Understand what exactly? That the moment I'd been waiting for, planning for, and paying for was being handed to someone else because it avoided conflict? I didn't say anything at first, just nodded, like my neck was moving on its own. She hugged me, told me she loved me, and left. I stood there long after the door closed. The wine was still on the counter, unopened. My chest ached in that quiet, dangerous way. It wasn't about Mark. It wasn't even about Brenda. It was that my own daughter, my own flesh and blood, had chosen convenience over connection, peace over my presence. She didn't want me to walk her down the aisle because she didn't want to confront her mother. That was the truth, even if she wouldn't admit it. And in that instant, I felt more like a wedding ATM than a father, just a man signing checks. But I didn't lose my cool. I didn't yell. I didn't try to guilt trip her. I told her I understood. And the worst part is, I meant it. I understood exactly where I stood, somewhere outside the frame, watching from the shadows, clapping politely while someone else took my place. That night, I walked past the stack of invoices on my desk, the caterer, the florist, the venue deposit. And for the first time, I wondered what would happen if I just pulled the plug on everything. I didn't mention it the next time we spoke, nor the time after that. Megan chattered about table settings and color palettes, and I nodded along as if I hadn't been silently relegated from my own daughter's life. I think she mistook my silence for grace. Or maybe she hoped that if we just kept moving forward, I'd forget what had been taken from me, but I didn't. Every call about floral arrangements, every email about vendor deadlines, each one rubbed against the wound she'd left in my chest. I kept thinking about how casual she sounded, how rehearsed it seemed, as if she'd already explained it dozens of times before she got to me. Worse, as if she'd already decided how I should feel about it. Calm, supportive, distant. But I was none of those things. I was grieving a moment I would never get back. Brenda called me a few days later. That, in itself, was strange. We hadn't spoken on the phone in over a year. I almost didn't answer, but curiosity got the better of me. Her voice was sweet, cloying. In that way, I'd learned to distrust. "Hi, David," she said. "Just wanted to make sure you and Megan are on the same page about the ceremony. I know it's a small change, but we think it's for the best." We think. Not Megan. Not, I think. But we think, as if she and her husband had rewritten the script and given my daughter a supporting role. "It'll avoid any unnecessary drama," she added. "And Mark has earned this moment, you know." I don't quite remember what I said back, something polite, something hollow and contained. What I do remember is gripping the edge of the kitchen counter until my knuckles turned white. I couldn't sleep that night. I lay there, staring at the ceiling, the silence of the house weighing on me like a physical burden. I thought about all those years fighting to be enough. How I fought for fair visitation schedules. How I drove across town twice a week for 5 years for pickups and drop-offs. How I sat on rain-soaked bleachers at her soccer tournaments just to wave at her from the sidelines. And now, with a single call, Brenda had managed to snatch away the one role I had left. Mark deserved it for being present during her college years, when I had been deliberately kept at arm's length, when every decision required negotiation and every holiday was a tug of war. I kept fighting when it would have been easier to give up, and this was my reward. The following weekend, we met for brunch. Megan was glowing. She talked about dress fittings and last-minute dessert changes. I tried to be present. I really did. But then she said something that stopped me cold. "Mark's been practicing the walk with me," she said, laughing. "He's taking this very seriously." My fork clattered against my plate. I looked up and caught the fleeting nervousness in her eyes. She knew, somewhere beneath the smiles and place cards and Pinterest boards, that she was betraying me. She took a sip of her mimosa and avoided my gaze while I just sat there, swallowing resentment like it was Eggs Benedict. When the bill came, I paid it without a word. Walking to the parking lot, she took my arm. "Dad," she said softly, "I know this is hard, but I need you to be okay with it. I need this day to be peaceful, please." I looked at her, really saw her, and I recognized the little girl who used to climb into my bed after nightmares, the teenager who called me crying from the mall because her debit card was declined. Now she was a woman begging me to accept her erasure in exchange for a quiet lunch, and I understood she wasn't asking me to understand. She was asking me to disappear to make it easier for her to pretend the trade-off had come at no cost. "I want you to be happy, Megan," I said finally. "That's all I've ever wanted." She smiled, relieved, and I smiled too. But inside I was falling apart. That night, I sat at my desk and pulled out every receipt, every invoice. The total made my eyes blur. Over $35,000. Venue, food, lighting, photographer, DJ, even the damn custom cocktail napkins with their initials. All paid for, all in my name. I opened my computer and looked at the draft emails I'd started and deleted for weeks. Then I selected one and began to type. Hello, this is David Peterson. I'd like to cancel our agreement for the Megan Johnson wedding, effective immediately. The response came in a text message, not a call, not a face-to-face conversation, just gray bubbles on a screen that lit up around 9:30 p.m. on a Tuesday. Hey Dad, can we talk tomorrow? Mom thinks it would be better if you don't come to the wedding. I'm sorry. I stared at the message for a full minute before the screen went dark. My hands didn't move. I didn't reply. I just sat there, the dim light from my phone softly illuminating the dining room where the items for her rehearsal dinner were still in my Amazon cart, unpurchased. I felt like a man in the middle of a dream that suddenly shifts, when people you know become strangers and the ground beneath you moves just a little, until you realize you're not standing on anything solid anymore. I didn't sleep that night. I didn't know if it was anger or grief, or a bitter mixture of both, that kept me awake. The silence of the house was thick and relentless. I walked from room to room like a ghost, touching picture frames and lingering over old birthday cards she'd given me over the years. World's best dad. Thanks for always being there. One even had a little drawing of a father wearing a cape. The irony wasn't lost on me. I'd worn that cape for 2 decades, every time she called, and now I was being asked not
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get 1 full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
To even show up. Not because I'd done anything wrong, not because I'd failed her, but because my presence was inconvenient, disruptive, a variable that didn't fit into Brenda's carefully curated vision of harmony. The next day, I waited for her call. It didn't come. At 4:15 p.m., I called her. She answered quickly, her voice light, as if she'd been rehearsing her lines all day. "Hi, Dad," she said, as if nothing was wrong. I asked her to explain. She sighed. "It's just that Mom thinks it'll be tense if you're there. She's worried Mark will feel awkward, and I don't want drama. You know how she is." "Yes, I thought I do. I know exactly how Brenda is. I was married to her for 13 years and spent another 15 trying to co-parent through her emotional minefields. I asked Megan if this was what she wanted, if she truly wanted me not to come to the wedding." There was a pause. Then she just said, "I just want the day to go smoothly." I didn't yell. I didn't plead. I just stood there, the silence stretching between us like a taut wire. I could hear her breathing on the other end, quick and shallow, as if she was waiting for me to explode so she could hang up and say she tried, but I didn't give her that. Instead, I said, "Okay." That was it, just one word. But it felt like an earthquake inside me. I repeated it, softer this time, almost to myself, and she exhaled, as if I'd given her permission to feel okay about what she'd done. "Thanks," she whispered. "I knew you'd understand." She didn't understand anything about me. After I hung up, I sat in the driveway for almost an hour. I watched the light fade from the sky, the way the day doesn't end. It just folds into something darker. That's how I felt. Folded, smaller, diminished, like I'd been slowly edited out of the story, scene by scene, until only my name on the checks remained. I thought again about the money, the ridiculous amount I'd poured into a wedding I wasn't even allowed to attend. And for what? To avoid drama. To keep the peace between Brenda and her new husband. It was then I understood that I wasn't just excluded, I was betrayed. And that betrayal didn't need explosions or fights. It came in a soft voice and a carefully worded request. It came from the daughter I'd built my life around. The one person I thought would never ask me to sit out the most important day of her life. But she did, and in doing so, she made a choice. Maybe she didn't see it that way. Maybe in her mind, it was a temporary compromise, a necessary evil. But for me, it was the final eraser, the moment I stopped being her father and became just another logistical hurdle. That night, I opened all the contractual emails I had saved. One by one, I began the process of voiding them. The venue deposit was refundable with a small penalty of $500. The caterer hadn't bought most of the ingredients yet, so I could pull out without penalty. The florist wasn't as understanding, but it didn't matter anymore. I wrote each email calmly, firmly. Plans have changed. We will no longer be moving forward with the services for the Johnson Smith wedding on date. Please confirm cancellation. I offered no explanations, expressed no regret. I simply took back what was mine. By midnight, half the wedding had been canceled, and I slept for the first time in weeks. There was something strangely therapeutic about it. Hitting send on those emails, one after another, like closing doors I should never have walked through in the first place. The first vendor to reply was the photographer, a woman named Jenna, with a polite but confused response. Sorry to hear about the cancellation, David. Please confirm if this is for the entire wedding coverage or just the rehearsal dinner. I replied briefly, the entire event. Thank you for your time. She replied a few minutes later, wishing me the best. And that was it. One last person documenting a day I was no longer part of. It felt cold, perhaps even vengeful, but I truly wasn't trying to hurt anyone. I was simply reclaiming my place. Not at the wedding, but in my own life. The fallout came quickly after that. The venue coordinator, a sharp-tongued woman named Patty, called me directly. Mr. Peterson, I'm confused. Megan hasn't mentioned any changes. I kept my voice calm. That's between her and her mother. I'm the one who signed the contract, and I'm the one canceling it. There was a pause on the other end, then the faint sound of typing. Well, I suppose we'll have to release the date then. I thanked her and hung up. I offered no more details. I was no longer interested in explaining myself, not to Patty, not to Brenda, not even to Megan. Within 48 hours, the catering was also canceled. The DJ, whom I'd even grown to like, a quirky guy named Vinny who helped me create the father-daughter dance playlist, sent me a long email expressing his disappointment. Let me know if there's any other future event I can help you with, he wrote. I closed the email without replying. There wouldn't be another event. Not with Megan, not after this. Every button I pressed, every refund I processed, felt like a stitch coming undone. Not bleeding, exactly, just opening up, revealing something I hadn't wanted to see before. I'd been holding onto an image of fatherhood that no longer existed, a version of our relationship frozen in time, while the real reality had been quietly dismantled, piece by piece. The call started soon after. Brenda, of course, was first. She didn't even say hello. What the hell are you doing? She snapped, her voice sharp with panic. I almost laughed. Not because it was funny, but because she hadn't called me in months, and suddenly, I mattered again. I'm canceling what I paid for, I said dryly. If I'm not invited, I see no reason to fund the event. She huffed, like I was a child throwing a tantrum. This is Megan's wedding. You're ruining it. That stung. No, I said slowly. You guys already did that. I'm just adjusting my involvement accordingly. She swore at me and hung up. I wasn't surprised when Megan called later that night. I didn't answer immediately. I watched the screen glow three times before my thumb finally hit accept. Her voice sounded strained. Dad, she said, why are you doing this? I didn't answer her right away. I wanted to know how she thought this would work. Did she think I could just smile and pretend everything was fine, that I'd stay home while Mark walked her down the aisle and still pay for that moment? You asked me not to come, I said. I respected that. Now I'm stepping away from the rest. She started to cry, not heaving sobs, just those soft, broken tears that come when you're losing control. We've already sent the invitations. People booked flights. What are we supposed to do? I felt bad for her. I really did. But not enough to undo what I'd done. That's not my problem anymore, I said gently. You made a choice, Megan. Now you'll have to live with it. The downfall was immediate. Guests started calling Brenda looking for answers. Hotels had no records of block bookings. Vendors didn't show up. The rehearsal dinner turned into an impromptu potluck in Mark's brother's backyard. On the day of the wedding, I stayed home. I didn't check social media, didn't answer calls. I took my phone and left it in the kitchen drawer, and I sat on the back porch with a cold beer, my old Labrador, Max, at my feet, and the sun falling on me in slow, warm layers. I imagined guests arriving in suits and dresses, finding no chairs, no decorations, no music. I didn't feel joy at their confusion, only clarity. This was never about revenge. It was about drawing a line, and for the first time, I stood on the right side of it. The silence that followed was the loudest sound I'd ever heard. For days, no calls, no texts, no emails, just this echoing emptiness where my daughter's voice used to be. I didn't know if the wedding happened. I didn't ask. I could have gone online, checked her Instagram, or waited for some friend to post a blurry photo of Megan in white next to the man who wasn't me. But I didn't. I couldn't. What happened that day didn't belong to me, and in a strange, almost bitter way, I'd made peace with that. Or maybe I'd just gone numb. Sometimes the line between the two is thinner than we think. On the third day, I finally got a text from my sister, Linda. Heard about the wedding mess. What happened? I looked at the message for a while before replying. Ask Brenda. That's all I said. I wasn't interested in defending myself anymore. Not anymore. For too long, I played the role of the quiet provider, the man who showed up without being seen, the man who paid, smiled, and stepped aside. I did it in the marriage, I did it after the divorce, and most of all, I did it with Megan because I loved her and thought that was enough. But it turns out love doesn't always guarantee permanence. Sometimes it just makes you more willing to be erased. Eventually, the messages started trickling in. Some came from extended family, others from friends who had attended the wedding that wasn't. One cousin wrote, "We went to the park where the ceremony was supposed to be, and there was nothing there." Megan looked mortified. Another guest said they were stranded with no food or music, and that Brenda blamed a catastrophic vendor failure. A few people suspected the truth and approached more directly. "Was it you who canceled everything?" I didn't deny it. I didn't explain, just replied, "Yes." No one pushed further. I think everyone, in their own way, knew this wasn't about the money. It was about something deeper, something no venue or cake could ever fix. Then came the letter from Megan. Not a call, not a visit. A printed letter delivered to my mailbox in an envelope with her handwriting on the front. My name written carefully, like she used to on birthday cards when she was 7. I took it inside, sat at the kitchen table, and stared at it for a long time before opening it. Her words were hesitant, shaky. She started with, "I don't know what to say," which, at least, sounded honest. Then came the part where she tried to explain how everything unraveled, how she didn't know Brenda would react so harshly to my decision about the walk, how the guests were furious, how the ceremony was rushed, held in their backyard under mismatched string lights they scrounged up. "It wasn't what I imagined," she wrote. "It wasn't what I wanted." She never said sorry, not once, but she did say she missed me, that she was confused, that maybe things went too far, that she didn't think I'd actually leave. Those last words hit me like a punch to the chest. "I didn't think you'd actually leave." As if love meant permanence regardless of the wound. As if a father's loyalty should extend beyond humiliation, exclusion, beyond even being explicitly uninvited. I folded the letter and set it aside. I didn't cry. I didn't rage. I just sat there with a terrible calm, like a man standing in the ruins of something that burned down long before he arrived. I thought about writing back. I even started once, pen in hand, forming words on the page. But nothing felt right. Nothing felt true, because the truth was too sharp, too final. The truth was this. She didn't just choose Mark over me. She chose the path of least resistance. And in doing so, she confirmed a fear I'd carried for years, that all the effort I put into being a father wasn't seen as love, but as obligation, that in the end, I was just a wallet with a heart, a man invited only when convenient and erased when not. In the following days, I started returning things. The cufflinks I'd bought for the wedding, the dress shoes I never wore, the tie in her wedding colors. All returned in neat boxes, each a small act of closure. I deleted email folders, erased drafts. I didn't want to keep remnants of something that had become a wound. My house became quieter, cleaner, not empty, just clearer, like a stage after the final curtain falls. The play was over, and I would no longer pretend I hadn't been written out of the script. I wrote her another letter. It sat on my desk for 4 days before I sealed it, and even then, I wasn't sure I'd send it. It wasn't an apology. It wasn't even filled with anger. It was just honest, raw, in a way I hadn't allowed myself to be with her in years. Not out of fear of her judgment, but out of fear of revealing the truth. I started it the way I always did when she was little. "Hi, sweetheart." The rest came out slowly, methodically. Each word weighed like a stone. I told her I loved her, that I would always love her, but that love doesn't mean silence, that it doesn't mean disappearing so others can be comfortable. I told her I was proud of the woman she was becoming, but I couldn't support a version of her that asked me to step out of the picture she was painting of her life. I wrote that I didn't cancel the wedding out of resentment. I did it because I realized I was paying for something I wasn't even invited to witness, that every dollar I spent felt like I was signing off on my own disappearance, that I had allowed myself to believe I was essential in her life when, in reality, I had become an accessory, used for financial convenience and set aside when I became inconvenient. I told her that hurt me deeply, more than anything Brenda had ever done, because I expected more from her. I expected to be seen, not for what I paid for, but for who I had been, the father who always showed up. I reminded her of the nights I spent in the parking lot during her dance lessons because Brenda didn't want me in the studio building. The time I drove 6 hours through a thunderstorm when she had a high fever in her college dorm and didn't want to call her mother. The nights I fell asleep on the couch waiting for her to come home safe from parties. I didn't mention these things to make her feel guilty. I mentioned them because they were real, because they mattered, because in a world that constantly pulled us apart, those moments kept me tethered to the idea that, despite everything, I still mattered to her. I ended the letter like this. "I'll be here if you want to talk, but I won't chase you anymore, and I won't stand in the background of your life pretending that's enough. I love you, Megan, but I love myself too, and I won't trade one for the other again." I never got a response, at least not immediately. Weeks passed, then months. The holidays went by quietly. I heard from mutual relatives that she and her new husband, Kevin, moved into their small apartment on the east side of town, that the wedding photos never got framed, that she hardly talks about that day. I don't ask. I don't need to know. I've made peace with not knowing. That's one thing no one tells you about parenthood. You can do everything right, love with your whole heart, and still end up a stranger. But I don't regret what I did. If anything, I regret not drawing that line sooner. I regret all the years I spent trying to stay.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Friable, malleable. I thought being the bigger person meant making myself smaller to keep the peace. But peace without self-respect isn't peace. It's permission for others to hurt you again and again. And somewhere between the silence and the final letter, I found something I hadn't felt in a long time. Clarity. Not revenge. Not justice. Just the quiet assurance of a man who knows he finally did something for himself. Sometimes I wonder if she'll call. Maybe one day she will. Maybe she won't. I don't carry my phone with that hope anymore. I stopped measuring my worth in her invitations. I started living again. Simple things. Working in my yard, weekend fishing trips, reading the Sunday paper without searching for subtext in the silence. My life is smaller now, but not emptier. It's just mine again. And if she ever decides to reach out, I'll answer, but I won't bend. If you liked it, don't forget to leave a comment, and support the channel by subscribing. See you in the upcoming stories.